Elliot Friedman from Hockey Night in Canada and 32 Thoughts joining me now. Friege, are you on the same page as me? And that is, it's not so much about the games anymore for the Vancouver Canucks. We know the damage. We know the team.
Yep.
We know what needs to be done. To me, it's just, I feel awful watching JT Miller last night, you know, asking if, you know, he's asked if all the players are on the same page, and he says, I don't know. Bo Horvat comes out and says, I know you're looking for answers, but I don't have any answers. I don't know how much there is more to say about Vancouver other than the story continues, and I feel real bad for anyone that has to get in front of a microphone after a game these days.
Well, this is a day that, Jeff, you know, you're probably looking at it for the Canucks and probably their fans and their media too, that you're happy it's a day off, right?
Yeah,
you know,
of course.
It's nobody's playing. You don't have to talk to anybody. You know, you can just... you can just get away from it for a day. Now, that doesn't mean we're not going to fill up all the broadband and radio and television airwaves of the world without talking about it. But at least the people who are most directly affected can kind of get away. You know, I have to say, I've said it a couple of times now. I think they really want to wait to make sure they do the right things, and they don't want to do anything that they regret. But when I saw last night the way that game ended, and Miller's comments and Horvat's comments and Green's comments, I did wonder if we might get just like a mercy coaching change today. I did wonder if it was going to happen. Now, I don't think that's happening. You know, but like, it was hard not to watch that last night and just say, you know, maybe they just do it because you almost have to do something. But I really don't want to, excuse me. I generally, though, stick to my belief. The best information that I have is that they don't want to do anything that they're going to regret. And I think part of the problem is, I think internally there's a lot of different opinions on what should be done and what the timetable should be. And I think there are people at the very top who are holding on to it and saying, no, we can't do something just fast, reckless, quick. Mm-hmm. We have to do this right. And as we do this right now at 9:10 in the morning, Vancouver time, that's, I think, the opinion. Although who knows, it could change.
Here's what I wonder about this situation, and this is all after, you know, Chicago made their moves, Anaheim made their move as well. I wonder about the nature of making moves at either the coaching level, specifically the manager level, of course, or any higher level, team president of hockey operations or anything like that, considering that teams can no longer afford to make any mistakes,
yes,
cannot afford to have any surprises.
Well, I think that's absolutely a factor.
That's what I wonder in all of this is, mm-hmm, okay, maybe they are committed to making a change at one of these levels, but mm-hmm, knowing how the team can't have a jack-in-the-box coach, a jack-in-the-box general manager where, boom, surprise, you didn't know this about me and my past, I wonder if this is, we're going to see more of this because teams will go through a vetting process for any new hires, the likes mm-hmm of which we may have never seen before in the NHL.
I think that's true, Jeff. You know, I was talking about it with someone the other day, and, you know, one of the things they said to me was, even the people that you know, you have to vet them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because you just have to make sure, right? You can't afford to be wrong. And, you know, like, I think the thing is, what we know now is that the process of Vancouver and the decisions they're going to make, it really started, you know, 10 days ago, last Monday, when ownership met. So, you know, who knows what's been done in terms of research or potential replacements or things they might do that's been done in the 10 days. They could have already started that process. But I think the point you make is a good one. And like I said, someone was saying to me the other day that even the people that you know, you just have to make sure. So yeah. I do think that's a factor, but the Canucks, if they wanted to, could have started it already.
You have to make sure. It's like in journalism, Friege, when someone says, when your mother says she loves you, get confirmation. Always, always check. Always check.
I got news for you. In my family, I want like two-factor authentication.
Well, one thing I'm pretty sure of that if the Islanders could do so, they'd want to postpone their next three games, which are all against Metropolitan Division teams, as they go through their COVID situation. You know, they lose last night to the Rangers in a really old school game, I should point out as well. And they've got the Penguins, the Rangers again coming up, and then the Philadelphia Flyers. This is a chance where they could really dig themselves an even deeper hole. If you're Lou Lamoriello here, are you not thinking, please, much like Ottawa, can we postpone some of these games?
Well, I think all you had to do was look at Lamoriello. It's like sometimes it's not what he says, it's just how he looks, right? Mm-hmm. And if you watched his media availability last night before the game, you could see he was clearly displeased. And, you know, this is one of the things I've kind of asked around on. You know, Ottawa had three games postponed. The Islanders haven't had any. San Jose, which had seven cases as well, they didn't have any. So one of the things you're kind of looking at is, you know, what's the difference? Why is it that Ottawa would have games postponed while San Jose or St. Louis or the Islanders haven't? And the best answer I can get is that, number one, it's the doctors who make the call. And number two, it's that they go by, you know, containment or lack thereof. And to this point, I've been told that there was that Ottawa had another level where they couldn't contain it. And that was why they had games, they were temporarily shut down and their games were postponed. And that's what I heard, is that it just felt that the Senators situation got to another level. Now, I know that's not going to please the Islanders or their fans, but I've asked, and that's the explanation I've been given. And, you know, that's the best answer I can give you right now, Jeff.
Yeah, it's tough for the Islanders right now. And even tougher is, you know, you the Islanders, and you look around you last night, and even Philadelphia, despite the fact that they lost in overtime, so they pick up a point. Columbus beats Winnipeg. Pittsburgh beats Vancouver. Washington takes 2 points from the Montreal Canadiens. Like, teams around them are just creating more distance between themselves and the team that we thought might have been on top of the Metropolitan Division, certainly right around the 20-game mark. I want to get to the Maple Leafs LA situation from last night and ask you about Sean Jersey. But one quick follow up on the Rangers Islanders here. What did you make of the Rangers last night? And what do you make of Chris Kreider, who very quietly now scored goals 14 and 15? We talk a lot about, you know, Ovechkin, his scoring prowess, Leon Draisaitl, his prowess. We've been talking about Andrew Mangiapane as well in Calgary. How about Kreider with another two snapping him, 14 and 15 on the season?
Well, I think the one thing, first of all, I'm not talking about Ovechkin's scoring prowess anymore. I'm talking about Ovechkin's assist prowess. You know, so he's got 18 assists. You know how many he had last year?
Offhand, no.
18.
And
you know how many?
Now at the end of November.
You know how many he had in the year that they played like 65 games or whatever it was?
18.
When the 19.
Oh,
so he's one off. Like, I think the most assists he has ever had in a year, I think, is 59. He's on pace for he's on pace for 72, I think, now. And the other thing too is that the most points he's ever had in a year is 112. He's on pace for something like 135 right now.
So he's a playmaking winger now. He's Russian Pat Kane. All of a sudden, late in his career, he's turned into the setup man.
Well, you know what's going to ruin this is when Backstrom comes back and he takes all the assists away.
It's true.
But I like we're talking about McDavid and Draisaitl, and deservedly so. Like, those guys are playing phenomenal. But Ovechkin's off to a Hart Trophy start too.
He is.
You know, and the other thing is the way he's scoring it. Like, the most wrist shot goals he's ever scored in a year is 29. And he's on pace for 39. The fewest slap shot goals he's ever scored is 5. He's on pace for 4. But, you know, watching him last night, you know, like, this is a guy who's later in his career, and he's a reminder that you're always evolving, right? And you do what you need to do. And, like, to me, as, you know, McDavid and Draisaitl are certainly having Hart Trophy level performances, but so is Ovechkin. I'm blown away. I know you were asking about Kreider, but I'm blown away by Ovechkin right now.
Yeah, no, I think we all are. And I think one of the interesting things about it, too, is how he's scoring the goals. And at last check, I think it was only two that he scored from the quote-unquote Ovechkin office. So yeah. It's not as if he's got like 13 of his 15 from the Ovechkin off, the Ovechkin spot where he normally scores. Like, he's scoring them from all around. Like, honestly, it's a freak that we're seeing right now. This is a freakish situation with Ovechkin. And it's like, hey, it's great. It's awesome. But it's just weird.
It's great to watch. About the Islanders and Rangers, I thought the thing that stood out, like, Kreider's been great. I thought the thing that stood out last night, though, was Fox going after the Islanders. Because you remember last year when they made the coaching change, what did they talk about? The losses to the Islanders, right?
Yeah, they did. Yeah, we all pointed at the Tom Wilson situation.
And that was a factor, no question. Yeah. But the Islanders was a big one, too. Big one.
And Alexi Lafreniere going at Jean-Gabriel Pageau after he caught Lindgren. Yep. Like, that's another.
Are you going to stand up for each other or not? Especially against the Islanders, because you know the Islanders are going to push you around. And you know they're going to stand up for each other.
Oh, man. The NHL is just so much better when the Islanders or Rangers are playing like this against each other. It's just awesome.
Yes.
6-2, Leafs beat the Los Angeles Kings last night. Leafs have now won 7 of their last 8. But, Campbell, great. Again, the price tag goes up. Sandin, 3 assists. Okay.
Sandin also, remember that game earlier this year when I can't remember who they were playing, but he got shrugged off on the breakaway?
Yeah, totally.
And someone scored. Yeah, and like those kind of plays, they stick with people. But I've noticed he's obviously taken what happened on that play to heart. Like last night, you know, you watch him. He's, you know, we all know he's got the offensive skill, and he keeps showing it. But what I'm starting to notice more is look, I mean, that play happens, and there's no question you get talked about it, and people talk about it, and your team talks to you about it. But he was really winning battles last night too. The player that they thought they were getting, you can really see he's coming into it now. There's there's no question about that. Just you know, really impressive. And I just think like one of the things with the Maple Leafs is the shooting percentage. They're one of the worst shooting teams in the league, 5-on-5. And I just can't imagine that's going to continue. I think they're just too good for that.
The Sean Durzi story was a good one. Durzi story was a great one despite the loss. And, you know, you pan up to mom in the crowd, and she's going crazy, scores his first goal, gets an assist as well on the Arvidsson goal. Do you have a quick thought? I mean, you did the game last night. Do you have a quick thought on Sean Durzi?
First of all, I love the warm-up jerseys they came out on.
Gorgeous.
Those things were beautiful, and they were auctioned last night for the King's Care Foundation. And, you know, look, it's interesting because there was a chance he was going to play. They had a back-to-back on the weekend. They played Carolina on Saturday and Arizona on Sunday. And there was a chance he was going to play Sunday. He didn't. I think some of his family went down there for that game. He goes back to the American Hockey League on Monday, has 3 assists, and then he's called back up and he plays last night. I mean, you know, he's probably going to tell his grandkids they won the game 8-0 and he had a golden assist instead of a 6-2 defeat. But, boy, you know, you can see the talent. You can, when that trade was going on, and, you know, I went back through my notes because, you know, sometimes people lose their memories or the stories kind of switch. That whole Toronto-LA deal, you know, the Kings really wanted Durzi. There was a possibility of Liljegren being in that deal, but the Kings weren't as high on him, and Liljegren is another guy who's really improving. But the Durzi was the guy they really wanted, and you can see it there. Now, you know, the Kings are starting to struggle a little bit, and it's going to be a battle for the playoffs there. And I do know that, you know, sometimes, you know, coaches are not as thrilled with the idea of giving players a chance when you're battling for your playoff lives. But, you know, last night he at least showed he can help them. And, you know, he's going to get opportunities because of that.
I want to ask you about Columbus. So last night they stick it to the Winnipeg Jets 3-0. Yeah. Pierre-Luc Dubois sidebar. Like, I got all the time in the world for Pierre-Luc Dubois. A, as a player, and B, as a person. I thought he handled it great. You know, there are all the signs around nationwide. There was the video tribute, which was soundly booed, and with a smile on his face, he waved the crowd. Which, and he's got that. He's just got a great look about him when he does it with the beard and the sideways Cheshire Cat smile. Like, it's great. Like, he has like this Voltairean smile about him. So I loved that. But man, at the end of it, we talked about Columbus at the beginning of the year and said, look, this is going to be a hard year for Columbus. Where the goal is going to come from? They've got good goaltending, but they've lost a lot. It's a rebuilding team. We'll see what we have. You know, we talk about the Pittsburgh Penguins flat out outworking other teams to get their points. Columbus does the same, man. Columbus just at the beginning of the game, just said, okay, we're going to try to outwork you. That's how we're going to win hockey games. And so far, you know, here we are 20 games in for a lot of teams, and they're outworking squads. And last night we saw that with Winnipeg.
You know, I think that the thing about Columbus, well, first of all, I think the goalie's excellent. And, you know, he's a real find for them, Merzlikins. Yeah. And, you know, you could do a heck of a lot worse than Korpisalo, too, is your combination, even though I think his future there is kind of uncertain, to say the least. But Merzlikins is a heck of a goalie, so he eliminates your mistakes. But the one thing I think about Columbus is, even though they made a change this year at the coaching position, going from Tortorella to Brad Larsen, the organization refused to give up on its ethos. And its ethos is that we are going to outwork you and we are going to grind you. And, you know, they're still very much like that. I think it's very hard sometimes to change. When you change coaches, you tend to change your personality. I don't think Columbus has changed its personality a lot. You know, the other thing too is, I was looking at this the other day, I believe Chicago's pick is only top two protected.
So let me check that right now.
The one in the Seth Jones deal. So
it is only top two. Yes, correct. Yes.
So, like, depending on the results of the lottery, they could have a huge, another huge pick near the top this year.
And this is turning into what's looking like an interesting year as well, where the, like, I still think Shane Wright goes first overall, Brad Lambert.
I guess there's another player that people are talking about because he's played more.
Yeah, there's a few, but I mean the two that we've given, you know, the most space to haven't exactly had the best starts to their season. So you wonder.
Well, it was funny. I was talking about this the other day. Who's the other prospect from overseas? You know, you and Sam know these guys.
Sammy would know which one more specifically than I would. I mean, let me grab Sammy's list. Hang on.
Okay, so
go ahead.
One of the things that someone was talking about with me the other day is. And, like, Shane Wright at the under-18s last year, I mean, he was phenomenal.
Fantastic.
But one of the things that people were saying to me is that the biggest challenge in deciding who you're going to take at the top of the draft this year is, you know, the players in Europe have played more games.
Yep.
You know, the players who've been in North America because of last year, obviously, they haven't played as many. Now, sometimes I think we overthink this. But I know that has come up in conversations. I just don't follow. Like, obviously, I mean, I know who the top prospect is, at least has been, is Wright. But I don't follow this as much as people who really, like guys like Sam and you, who really pour
Ivan,
your time
Ivan
into
Miro
this.
Shchenko is who you're thinking of from Omsk.
Okay.
I was thinking of the kid from Finland, Slokovsky. But no, it's Miro Shchenko from Omsk.
So that's the thing that people have been telling me is that they're trying to sit there and they're saying, well, one's played a lot more games than the other, and what does that mean? Like, how does that affect your decision to pick one over the other? It's a, you know, it's a challenge. You know, a few people were telling me that's something that teams are starting to make as a factor.
So, interesting tweet about an hour ago, Fareed, from you. I'll read it out to our audience who hasn't read it. Depending on Olympic participation, countries may need a second coaching staff. Here in Canada, we'll have Claude Julien at Spengler Cup and Olympics if the NHL doesn't go, with Bruce Boudreau as an assistant, assuming neither is hired elsewhere by then. What's the story here, Fareed?
So Canada has a couple of international tournaments coming up, and one of them is the Spengler. And in addition to that, I think the Channel 1 Cup, too, someone pointed out to me that they're going to play in Moscow. And, excuse me, so basically they need a coaching staff for that. And The other thing is that the Olympic list that were sent to the International Ice Hockey Federation, they have 55 players on it, 56 for Canada, because there's a special exemption for Carey Price. However, I've been told that for the non-NHL, in some cases, that increases these lists to like 150, because you've got to have your backup team ready in case the NHLers don't go. And so then you have to have a backup coaching staff if the NHLers like John Cooper aren't there. So mm-hmm. I've been told that it's going to be announced soon that Claude Julien is that head coach. Bruce Boudreau is on the staff. I believe also Scott Walker is on that staff now, I've been told. So that's the coaching staff, and they'll coach Canada at the Channel One Cup and the Spengler. And then if the Olympians don't go to the Olympics, they'd be the backup Olympic coaching staff. Now, that's all dependent on if any of these guys get hired elsewhere, but that's mm-hmm. what I've heard.
I want to finish this conversation by talking very briefly about one player on Nashville. The Predators lose last night 5-2 to the Vegas Golden Knights. Mark Stone scores, albeit empty net, but that's okay. Philip Forsberg returns to the Nashville Predators, scores goals number 5 and 6.
Yeah.
I'm of the belief that we will be able to tell all we need to know about the Nashville Predators' future based on what they do with Philip Forsberg. If they re-sign him, there's no rebuild. If they don't re-sign him and move him come trade deadline, there will be. What do you think?
I think that's also fair to say. I mean, the other thing too is it's also the player's choice, right? Like, is there any reason that Forsberg wouldn't want to stay in Nashville?
No, I totally agree.
Would he want to go somewhere else? You know, the one thing about Nashville we've learned is, and Duchesne's actually played very well this year.
He has.
But they felt burned by some of the long-term contracts they've dealt with. They've handed out, right? So that's led to some challenges in some of their more recent negotiations. So I think the question also is not simply rebuild or not rebuild. It's also what does Forsberg want and how does Nashville feel about long-term deals? Now, Josi got one, and I think that one is very fair. No question about it. He's a Norris Trophy caliber player. You know, they know Forsberg better than anyone else does. So I think that's also factors in the decision.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, we got to hustle.
Grape? I was talking about this with Lance on the board. Are you a red grape guy or a green grape guy?
Green grape guy all day. How about you?
I've just been chowing down on red grapes this whole interview.
No, I'd agree with you if you were right, but green grapes are better.
All right, Chad, later, Merrick. Bye.
Enjoy the grapes. All right, there he is being fed grapes as he does his daily hit here. It's nice to be Elliot Friedman. It's good to be the king, as Mel Brooks once said.